Betsy. The anger has been brewing inside Betsy since her meeting with Francis. She can feel it percolating, bubbling up through her veins, threatening to come out. She hopes she can contain it. She can't afford any further humiliation today. She's already had a run-in on the way to the tent this morning. Melanie had sidled up to her as they'd walked, shoving that damn clipboard under her nose. "We want you to come up from the back of the tent today with one of your own cakes as a way to introduce today's challenge." "But I haven't baked a cake," Betsy dismissed her. "Don't worry, we've had one made." Betsy looked down at Melanie over her nose. "By a professional." Betsy had said nothing, which gave her the confidence to continue. "How would you feel about that, walking up the center aisle with one of your beautiful cakes?" It wasn't so much the idea that bothered Betsy, but the way it was presented, as if she were a child being cajoled, as though she needed hand-holding. Betsy had stopped short, causing Melanie to nearly trip in an effort to stay on pace with her. "I'd feel just fine about it if it were my cake, but I feel like the audience might find it all a bit gimmicky. The spotlight has always been on the bakers, not on me." Melanie had paled at the tone of her voice, which pleased her. "But what do I know? I'm not the one keeping the whole show together, am I?" Betsy had started walking again, briskly, so that Melanie had to rush to keep up, sputtering out some sort of apology. Now, Betsy can't tell if the mood has changed or if it is just her own sour feelings infiltrating her perception of everything. The contestants seem more tense than usual, less perky and optimistic. She hopes it doesn't translate to the screen. It would be annoying to have to edit out all their worried little faces, try to force some cheer into it. It never plays as well when it's fake. Archie clasps his hands in front of him, waiting to begin judging. He doesn't look at her. Is it because he suspects she knows what he's done? Or perhaps he can just feel the bad mood radiating from her like a toxic gas and thinks it better to keep his distance. Either way, she prefers him like this, quiet, subservient. If there were any unwanted noise from him, she thinks she might explode. The bakers bring their cakes up to the front table. There's been a shift in the energy of the four of them. There always is around halfway through the week. It won't be shown on camera. We like to keep it light and heartwarming. But in person, Betsy can feel it. They are becoming more competitive, more ruthless. It's only natural when the stakes are so high. They may squeeze each other's hands as they wait for the verdict to be read out at the end of each day, but it's all an act. Each desperately wants the others to lose. Four cakes stand in front of her on the judging table. Betsy begins at the far left with Hannah's. It is a tall layer cake coated in a thick light pink buttercream that is expertly decorated with drips of white chocolate running down the sides. The frosting cannot conceal that the cake inside is lumpy and misshapen. The top layer bulges, giving it away. A mound of raspberries is piled a bit haphazardly on top, but otherwise it is professionally decorated, the piping lines neat as a pin. Hannah looks down, embarrassed. "I'm sorry. I wanted to do much more with the decoration, but I ran out of time. I hope it's not awful." Betsy finds Hannah's false modesty a bit tedious, but you do have to give the girl credit. Her technical skills are truly unparalleled this year. She cuts two thick slices and slides them onto both her and Archie's plates as Hannah anxiously twists her hair around a finger. The number of layers is truly remarkable, 8 at least, in alternating pale pink and white, all the exact same width, with a thin layer of bright jelly. The cake is held together with thick piped buttercream, flecked with raspberry pieces. Betsy takes a bite, feeling her teeth stick rather than glide through the crumb as she was anticipating. She chews as the camera zoom in closer. Hannah knots her hands under her chin in suspense. The cake is cooked well enough, but it looks like it has split. Did you try to put a broken cake back together? "Just a bit," she winces. "That'll do it. It's fallen over here," Betsy nods, prodding at the cake a bit more. "And as I'd feared, your jelly hasn't set." Hannah's ears turn a bright pink, and she looks to Archie for salvation. But to Betsy's surprise, he sides with her. The sponge is far too heavy, Archie agrees, tapping on the inside of the cake with his fork to show how unyielding it is. Hannah goes pale, and her face strains as though she might start to cry as Archie continues. I also think that the buttercream is a bit too intense. It doesn't taste like much of anything, but is somehow still overpowering. I would have liked some flavor in there to brighten it up, maybe some fresh berries or even some sort of compote in place of the jelly. For a cake with so much raspberry color, I'm not getting much raspberry flavor at all. Betsy hates to agree with him. Stylistically, it's a beautiful cake, though. Thank you, Hannah, Archie says crisply, as Hannah's slender shoulders slump in defeat, and she retreats wordlessly from the table. The next cake is Pradumna's. It's a slim chocolate tower with a rich dark chocolate icing. The top of the cake is covered in crushed homemade peanut brittle and tiny chocolate bonbons held in place by expertly piped dark chocolate ganache. It is precise and beautiful. It's a dark chocolate peanut butter cake, he says, shrugging almost apologetically. I know, not the most original pairing. What matters to us is flavor and texture, Betsy reminds him. You can have the most creative flavor pairing, but if it doesn't work, if the bake is off, it will fail. She has seen far too many mistakes with strange combinations of ingredients. No one needs too much almond extract or, God forbid, rose water in their baked goods. She takes a bite, making sure to get a good part of the peanut butter filling. It's rich, almost too rich, she tells him through a mouthful. She feels as though she needs something to wash it down. Archie reaches past Betsy with his fork, and her eyes flick to him as he takes a bite. Oh, man, I disagree. This is so good, Archie says. Betsy breathes in sharply, trying to control her anger. She's noticed how much different Archie is with men than with women. He acts as though they're old pals. It has a strange way of leaving women out in the cold, she thinks, but maybe she's just being sensitive, given the circumstances. You'll have to take it a bit more seriously if you want to keep improving, she admonishes him gently. Of all of them, her and Archie included, the only one who seems in better spirits today is Pradumna. She's noticed Pradumna's stance has shifted a bit. His smile seems more genuine, his shoulders relaxed. He looks happy, unworried. Betsy, you've uncovered my terrible secret. I think baking is fun, he says, grinning handsomely. Stella is next up. Her cake is striking to look at, stacked in graduated tiers, so that it almost resembles half of a bee's nest. It's lightly frosted in that naked style, the icing scraped away to reveal the edges of the sponge, cooked to perfection. A honey-colored glaze drips attractively down the sides, and small fondant bees with almond sliver wings cling to the tops of the cakes. A few are even hovering on wire to look like they are flying. I must say I've never seen a cake shaped like this. What are the flavors? Betsy asks, and Stella beams. It's flavored with orange zest and honey. It's striking, Betsy tells her. Stella blushes and smiles broadly, tucking a strand of hair behind her ear. I hope that's a good thing. It's a great thing, Archie agrees, and does that annoying twinkle thing with his eyes. Betsy watches as Stella looks away from him uncomfortably, delighted to see that some people are immune to his charms. Archie cuts into the cake with some difficulty, given its novel shape, and pulls out two staircase-shaped slices. He and Betsy take their bites. The cake is melt-in-your-mouth lovely, Betsy tells Stella, savoring the light, fluffy flavor. I don't mean to sound too full of myself, but it kind of reminds me of one of my cakes. Oh, yes, your optimistic honey cake. Stella trips over her words in excitement. I hope that's okay. That cake is a huge inspiration. All of yours are. I just love everything you do. Betsy smiles primly, flattered but trying not to show it, lest she be called out later for favoritism. You can really taste the orange here, Archie says, smiling yet again, as though he is aggressively trying to charm her. He really can turn it on when he wants to, Betsy notes wryly. Out of the corner of her eye, Betsy sees Hannah's eyebrows furrow miserably. It really is quite delicious, she agrees. The thin layer of icing, with the tanginess from the cream cheese, pairs perfectly with the honey. Nothing is too sweet. Delicious. Lottie's cake is last. This one is layered 3 deep, impressive for a moist, snacking-style cake, which normally couldn't be stacked. The bottom layers are bound together by a thick cream cheese icing, while the top is coated with a thick streusel crumble held in place by a circle of decorative piping. It's a layered blueberry buckle, Lottie says, looking at Betsy hopefully. Now that is another unconventional choice from you, Betsy says, eyeing the streusel topping, an odd choice for a layer cake. A buckle is a humble sort of cake, old-fashioned in its simplicity, that she hasn't seen around in years. Nowadays, most prefer a thick layer of icing, buttercream they can decorate, or the scraped edge of a naked cake. Something meant to impress on a table or in a photograph, rather than just be eaten at a family dinner or on a picnic. Secretly, it's kind of a relief to see such a normal person's cake be given its due. The decoration is lacking, Betsy tells her flatly, though the completely bare sides show an even sprinkling of blueberries, which is impressive. It can be difficult to keep berries from falling to the bottom of a cake, but these are evenly distributed throughout. The knife glides into the cake, which has a springy sort of give to it. She cleaves a slice away, leaving a small avalanche of streusel crumbs in its wake. The cake inside is plump and golden, studded with juicy blueberries. Betsy can tell before she even takes a bite that it has been cooked to perfection. The flavors hit her tongue and bring on a wave of nostalgia so strong that she has to steady herself against the table. It is heavenly. The sweet and sour of the blueberries wrapped in the soft vanilla-y cake. She is instantly transported back in time, back to her childhood. It is unquestionably the best cake of the bunch, simple and satisfying. The kind that if you were to bake it at home would leave you wanting more, taking secret trips to the kitchen to cut another slice. There's something else about it, though. Something personal. The cake is so intensely similar to one she's eaten as a child that Betsy takes a step backward, dropping the fork on the platter noisily. Betsy suddenly feels sick. It is all she can do to keep from spitting the bite back out into her hand. The cameras catch it all, zooming in closer as Betsy closes her eyes and forces the bite down her throat. Archie looks at her sideways, startled. He puts his own bite into his mouth. She looks away as he chews, his eyes squinting in pleasure. That is an amazing cake. Very well done, Lottie, he says, genuinely impressed. I want to bring the rest up to my room. Lottie smiles, and the others giggle jealously. Betsy feels dizzy. The texture is all wrong, Betsy croaks. She watches Lottie's face fall. Water, she barks out. Archie looks at her with a patronizing amount of concern, but she barely sees him. She feels instead like she is spinning, falling through time and space with nothing to grab hold of. I need to take a break, she waves her arms to signal the crew to stop filming. I'll be back shortly, she tells Melanie. You all right, Betsy? Archie calls after her as she flees toward the manor, not sounding all that concerned. She ignores him. Betsy's heart thumps wildly as she rushes across the lawn and past the stone lions into the manor, taking the stairs to the east wing as fast as she can and finally arriving, winded, at her rooms. She flings open the door to her study. The room is organized, tidy, still. Nothing looks out of place. Her desk is exactly as she's left it. A set of embossed stationery, a jar of pens, a framed photograph of her mother and father at a party hosted by the DuPont family. A stack of fan letters still sits in a basket on her desk, waiting to be read. She goes straight to the mantel, but she can see already that the recipe box is gone. Her throat constricts as she spins around the room, her eyes scanning the shelves, the windowsills, even as she knows for a fact that she hasn't misplaced the recipes. Betsy realizes that she hasn't really focused on Lottie all this time. She has looked at her, of course, but she hasn't really seen her, not examined her the way she did the others. Perhaps even at her age, she is capable of ignoring other older women, of underestimating them. The thought fills her with fear. She thinks of Lottie standing before her at the judging table. She is a humble-looking sort, a green cardigan wrapped around her shoulders. Her brown clogs accentuate her thin legs and knobby knees. Her hands twist together in front of her. Her mind flips through all of the people from her past, decades worth of them. Her heart skips a beat. The image crystallizes of an insecure little girl waiting in the doorway of her bedroom, hands clasped to be invited to play. The recognition knocks the wind out of Betsy, and she drops to her knees on the floor of her study. "Elizabeth Bunting," Betsy whispers, her stomach curdling with fear.